Just over a month ago, Perspective heard from Robert Murray, who explained his plan to build an anaerobic digester and energy hub at Andrus. Just over a week ago, a group of farmers and government officials visited Scotland to see how AD plants work. I joined them as an independent observer, and this week's agenda gives the farmers' view on how energy crops could work for Manx agriculture. We hear first from farmer Tom Corlett.
Tom Corlett here from Legidoo in Peel.
And what have you got out of this trip, would you say?
I would say it's been quite eye-opening, really. I know that going through uni, these were a thing that were coming up and I'd never really taken too much notice of. And my brother had spoken about it quite a bit. So I thought I'd come on the trip and just see just how it works and if it could work or how it would work, and it's been quite eye-opening.
Unfortunately, the coach driver interrupted the interview at that point, but hopefully I'll catch Tom another time. Next, Scottish farmer and AD plant supplier Andrew Booth.
We farm just 10 minutes north of Aberdeen on the northeast coast of Scotland. So we first started back in 2017. The AD plant, we secured an AD plant on our land. So we're the landlord and the feedstock supplier of a 2.5 megawatt AD plant. Yeah, I think there's a few things about the energy crop. I think one thing was, you know, when we did this back in 2016-17, there was a lot of uncertainty in agriculture, and you know, I wanted some certainty for the business, and this gave us a steady supply or a customer that was wanting the same level of product every year. So that secured a number of acres. It also allows us to take the byproduct from the AD plant, which is digestate, which is the same as comes out the bottom of a cow, so it's loads of nutrients and fertilizer. We're able to spread that back in our land, which is great for the soil. And the discussion over energy across food, you know, we're in the northeast of Scotland where we grow a lot of malting barley for whiskey, and so the majority, a good part of our land goes not necessarily for food but goes for alcohol. So we on our farm we both energize the country, but we also feed them with the feed crops that we do grow.
In terms of those crops in Scotland, particularly where you are, we wouldn't say the north of Scotland, but you're kind of halfway up, aren't you? It's certainly some distance further north than the Isle of Man, so you have certain limitations on what you can grow here, and you can generally just grow one crop a year as opposed to two crops.
Yeah, most definitely. We have a limitation. We have very short weather windows. And within those weather windows, we can have, you know, four seasons in one day in Scotland many times. And you know, we grow, for the AD plant, we grow rye, which is a high biomass crop, and we grow grass. You know, Aberdeenshire is traditionally probably a livestock area, which have grown grass for forever, and we grow some pretty good grass. So our AD plant is fed on grass and rye, and we probably are farming, you know, a lot of marginal land that maybe wasn't being grown or being utilised to the full of its ability previously, that we're now able to farm. So it's not necessarily taking land out of production, it's actually making land that was marginal, making it more productive.
One of the things that surprised me was when you were giving the presentation to the farmers, you said that you would probably go for a mix of pricing. What we've heard from the previous place that we visited was there was a fixed price for the feedstock. I think you've got the same. And that's a guaranteed price. And some years that guaranteed price is not perhaps as good as when the markets are doing particularly well. But generally speaking, that's a more reliable, better solution for farmers. Why would you want to introduce that level of variability as well?
Well, I think what it does, if you look at a standard, a traditional crop, a commodity you're selling, so wheat or barley or such like, there's different options for selling. You can sell fixed price today, or a set price today, or a spot price, or you can sell futures, or you can do a pool with a group, or various other ways of selling. And this was the marketeers will tell you a mix of them all is the best way to go forward. So it's just looking at, you know, we're 10 years into a contract. There's potentially an opportunity to look at how it's done again. And, you know, hindsight's always a great thing. So it's not necessarily something we're definitely going to do, but certainly something we'd investigate going, well, yeah, there's an element of it that we want fixed price, but actually there's another bit. Is it a bit more risk and reward? And I suppose I'm probably I do like a bit more risk sometimes in my business.
And part of that risk, of course, would be investing in the plant. I mean, generally speaking, what seems to be the model that's followed is farmers will rent out the land, they'll provide the feedstock, but firms who know how to run AD plants then run the plants. You're thinking that maybe investing in the plant is a good thing?
Yeah, again, I suppose it's a bit like we're talking about there with the spread of risk with the feedstock. It's actually a spread of risk with our business, and we have a number of different aspects to our business in terms of, you know, the ag side of things, in terms of value-adding product in our oat factory and stuff. I suppose it's just another string to our bow to the actually, you know, is there another opportunity to invest for the business? So it's again... Some days, as I said, you know, we look at that and think, thank goodness I've got nothing to do with it. And other days, I think I'd love to be more involved. So, and we're very fortunate with the guys we work with just now, although we're not specifically involved, you know, there's definitely an open conversation that works. And I think that's probably more important than anything.
Could any of this have been established without some level of government support? Because I forget what the name of it is, but there's an RHI. Okay, so tell us what that is, and would this have worked if you didn't have it?
Yeah, I suppose no is probably the straight answer. When my understanding of these, when they were first started, 30% of the income was derived through a wholesale gas sales, and 70% is through a RHI, which is a renewable heat incentive, which is a government backed subsidy. During when the price of gas went up, that suddenly it became far more profitable, but then the price of gas has come back down again, and that, you know, that number has maybe changed again. If you look at turbines and wind turbines, you know, when they were originally built, you know, it wouldn't have worked without the incentive. Now it's a point where actually there's, you know, maybe it nearly is break even, or it can be profitable, or to do it without the incentive. And I suppose we're still in the infancy stage of biogas. You know, we're only 10 years in, 15 years in. You know, turbines been around a lot, probably 10 years longer than us. So maybe another 10 years' time, when it comes to the end of it, that there's other opportunities here through carbon capture or hydrogen that will give these plants life after beyond the 20 years RHI.
The other thing you were mentioning to us is you've got a famous neighbour. Well, tell us about your neighbour.
Hey, so we've got the current president of the United States of America, President Trump, is our one of our closest neighbours with his golf course. So if anybody likes golf, it is one of the best courses you'll probably have ever played. I'm questionable if it's the best in the world, but it's definitely up there. We're very fortunate in Aberdeenshire. We've got some fabulous courses up the coast from Royal Aberdeen to Croon Bay and such like, and Trump's right in the middle of the two. So and he's just built a second course, so we farm round about that, and so we get some pretty good views, to be fair.
Xander Sarsons operates one of the most successful AD plants in Scotland. Apologies for the sound quality in this interview. Xander's loud voice was a little bit strong for my microphone.
I'm Xander Sarsons, site manager on a Peace Hill biogas, and been running the plant since it's built for 10 years now.
And when you started, you didn't know an awful lot about running a biogas plant.
No, I was working on a farm on a tractor, and I knew nothing about the biogas and about the plant and how it's made. We learned the very basics on a building stage, and then was most of it first year or two when the problems was coming up on a plant, and help was really on a phone and with the service team, which is helping us, but most of the stuff was just you really needed to figure it out and try to fix it to get the things going again.
And how do you figure it out? I mean, what, because I guess driving a tractor compared with figuring out how a biogas plant works, it would be quite different.
It is different, but a bit of my attitude is that way, that there is no problem, there is solution. And as long as you have a common sense, you can kind of figure out. Plus, I really like all the mechanical stuff, electrical stuff, and try to join those things together and understand which wee bit is now causing a problem and not letting us really to work. I really like the job, what I do, and nowadays when probably everything is about money, I would probably be here even if my money would be half less.
But don't tell the boss.
Yeah, don't tell the boss, and I really love my job, and I like what I'm doing.
So how much do you rely on external support? I mean, presumably there are some of the technical things that you will need people to come in and help with.
You have a stuff where obviously you need the different softwares to update the stuff. You need the specific tools. You need to do certification and all that stuff. But everything what's mechanical, you can really change it. Or basic electric stuff, you can change the stuff. It's not too much help. There is quite a few companies which is coming in to do the normal maintenance jobs, but any breakdowns, most of them we can deal by ourselves as long as we have a part.
For the Isle of Man, that's a really useful thing to know, because you know we don't have any AD plants on the island at the moment, so having experts would mean you'd have to fly them in to get them in. So actually your knowledge and your experience shows us that we could get someone trained up over the course of a year, and potentially they can do most of the day-to-day management and running.
I think you can easily do that. Probably with being remote, your biggest thing is to understand what's the main parts and keep them in stock. That's what we are doing here, just keep the parts in stock. Even if they need to sit for a year, they are there when you need them.
If you were starting this whole thing all over again, is there anything that you would redesign or do differently with the way that the plant's been built?
In real life, probably, yeah, we changed a few things, but most of the changes what we've done was mainly software related. What things comes on first, and some timing things being adjusted. There have been quite a lot of changes on software, but you understand that only when you operate it on a daily basis, and you think, here we can change something to make the things work better. In real life, like pipe work, things like that, it's quite well built, I would say. There's nothing what pops in mind straight away, but yeah, would definitely change that.
Penty Christian represented Linwill Farms Ellerslie on the visit. So, I mean, the obvious question, why take 2 days out of your busy farming life to come on a trip like this?
Well, we're somewhat fortunate this year that we've had some good weather back on the island, so we're just about on top of our own job at the moment, but I thought a trip like this we couldn't really miss, given the opportunity. I think the potential of a biodigester being used on the Isle of Man to produce gas and produce electricity has it's got a phenomenal future within the agricultural industry. It's got the potential of allowing us to increase the diverse amount of crops that we grow, improving our rotations and improving our health and soil structure. And I think it's also got an amazing potential to provide an extra income stream to farms throughout the island. So I'm really quite excited by the prospect of having a biodigester on the island if we do get that far.
Because, of course, one of the fears that I know some farmers have and others may have is that actually you're going to be taking production away from food. But actually, based on what we've been hearing so far, this actually might give you the opportunity to potentially grow more food crops than perhaps you would have done, because you can spread the risk over the energy crop stuff as well.
You're absolutely right. I think that with having the opportunity now, or possibly in the future, to add in extra crops that we can put towards the biodigester, it will complement what we're already doing. It'll complement the crops that we do grow on the island. And I think, as I previously mentioned, it can improve the soil health, which will allow us to be more productive. It will also allow us to be more productive financially if we have extra income streams from crops that currently we have no market for on the Isle of Man. Fodder beet or sugar beet, for example, which we definitely don't have a sensible or large market for on the island. If we did grow sugar beet, we would have to export to England, so that makes it a non-starter. But it would give a market for crops like that on the island. If we could fit different crops into our rotations, then our farmer soil health in general, I think, would be greatly improved.
And of course, that's something perhaps that most people listening won't understand, but having root crops, which effectively is what fodder beet is, in the midst of a 5-6 year rotation, helps in terms of that whole soil fertility.
Absolutely, and anything that changes the variety will allow us to manage any sort of pests and diseases, and hopefully go a bit more old school with a rotation of various crops. And it should allow us to use ideally slightly less sprays and chemical inputs. So I think there is amazing potential if we're allowed to do this, and I can't see any practical reason why we shouldn't. Couldn't be able to do this on the Isle of Man.
And what's been, again, I think quite helpful during this trip is the people we've spoken to, or who've spoken to us so far, have basically been given us the warts and all version. So we get to find out that actually, if we'd have done it, if we were starting again, we might have done it this way or that way or whatever. So it's really useful to get that. The negatives as well as the positives.
Well, yes, absolutely. I think we're looking at something that is now, you could probably describe as reasonably well established. I think the pitfalls of the earlier versions seem to have been overcome, and the understanding of how the digester actually works it seems a lot more understood. That was definitely what we took away from yesterday's trip. So, and the people we spoke to also seem very happy to share what they've learned and share their information, and I've suggested that we do get back to them if there's anything in particular we need to know as well, which I think is great. And I think that's something that perhaps comes off the back of the fact that we are not in direct competition to them in any way, shape or form, but I think farmers also do have a history of sharing information, and I think that shows through in the people that we've spoken to so far. So they seem very open and willing to share what they know, and I think they do want the Isle of Man project to be a success.
And what would you say is the most valuable thing that you've learned from this exercise?
Most valuable thing? I think it's growing increasingly obvious that we can do something like this on the island. I think the most interesting thing I've learned is how sensitive the digester is, and when it was described yesterday as being very similar to a 2,000 cow dairy herd, and if you think of more of the digester as a living organism, I think that helps you understand how sensitive it is and what's required to effectively keep the machine or the bugs alive that do produce the gas that then we can produce electricity. So every day is a school day, and hopefully today, on a second part of the trip, we're going to learn a little more about it as well.
General Secretary of the Manx National Farmers Union, Sarah Comish, was doing her best to remain neutral. We're on the coach on the second day of this trip to look at anaerobic digesters. What were you hoping to get out of this trip, and has the trip provided what you hoped for?
Yeah, I think it's been really interesting for me. I have to admit, I didn't know a lot about the whole process for anaerobic digestion. But what we've looked at so far, and what we're hopefully going to look at again today, is how it's been set up, how they've gone about it, and how successful it's been as well, and how it's impacted the local agriculture in the area as well. That's been quite important to have a look at.
And what have you noticed about how it's impacted on local agriculture?
Well, it certainly brings change. And that's one thing we're going to have to balance up, especially as the union do. We don't take a position on people's individual business decisions, obviously. The general the general overview of agriculture is really important to us and to our members and how they're affected by changes. I think that there's definitely a big opportunity for the industry here, and there's certainly a lot of interest from our members in this as an opportunity for them, because I think everybody's pretty conscious that there is quite a lot of pressure on the agricultural industry, the UK, Ireland, everywhere. You know, there's a lot of changes going on. And for us locally, it certainly presents an opportunity. I guess we've got to balance that up with how it's going to impact existing agricultural business on the island as well. So that's probably where we kind of try and sit on the fence, but we do have to factor in everybody's viewpoint on that from our membership perspective.
Because, of course, there will be many people listening to this, and probably quite a few farmers who'll be saying our role is to, and possibly they even go as far as to say our duty is to produce food. So what on earth are we doing getting into energy crops?
Well, I think agricultural business produces what is demanded of it. And if the priority for people is energy production, then agriculture would shift to energy production. You know, I mean, that's certainly what some of these businesses in Scotland have taken on board, is that the demand was there for energy, but not for food production. So agriculture is a business, you know, a farm is a business as much as any other business, and it's important that they're profitable, and that's the bottom line, really.
And of course, what this potentially could do, I guess, is give farmers a level of certainty in that they have, in many of the cases we've seen, guaranteed prices for their energy crops. So provided they can produce the energy crop, they know they're going to get a certain amount of money, and that might help them sort of spread the risk of going into some other particularly arable crops.
Yeah, I think so. And I think what we've kind of seen with this trip, and what everybody's seen, is that it's possible. And I think that's really important for everybody, because it's quite easy for us when we stay in the Isle of Man and we look at everything that's right in front of us, and we like to think, oh, well, it's not going to happen here, or we're not going to do it. And actually, you know, there's people here that are on this trip that are more than capable of producing energy crops. I think what was important for me to see here, and for us to all, everybody on this trip to understand, is that this is a possibility, you know, that there are people that are more than capable of doing this on the island. And I think it is another opportunity for the island as well, not just for the agricultural industry, but for the island. And to make agriculture more resilient. So what's really important for us is that we keep people in agriculture, and that we don't lose more people out of the industry. And it's an opportunity for younger farmers coming through as well. So I know I sound very positive about it, don't I? I am obviously quite conscious that there will be elements of the industry that might be negatively impacted by it as well, and that's what we've got to balance up as the union.
Again, one of the things that many people listening might be quite surprised or even shocked to learn from some of the interviews we've heard already is that in most cases farmers plant their crops and haven't a clue what the price is going to be. And I guess it's the same in the livestock industry. You know, you breed animals and you get livestock, and you really very much left at the vagaries of the market.
Yeah, I mean, the beef price is a real good example of that at the moment, isn't it? You know, we haven't seen beef prices like they are, and they seem to keep on climbing at the moment. But that in itself, that creates nervousness, because you don't know where it's going to go next. And it just seems to us, having looked at these businesses over here, that it's a 20-year commitment. you know, that's quite a big thing. And in order to make that 20-year commitment, you need to have that certainty around pricing. So they don't, what they've explained to us is they don't have those big fluctuations, the highs and lows in prices, and that probably gives them that grounding that they need.
There were certainly some Kraken machines one of the yards that we visited, and again they'd said the reason we were able to buy this is because we knew that for the next 20 years we had a guaranteed income.
Yeah, and that equipment, everybody in agriculture knows that equipment that you use these days is a huge investment. It's a lot of money, you know. I mean, some of those machines, they must be $500,000, some of them. And it was pretty impressive. But yeah, you can't invest that kind of money in that machinery unless you know that you've got some certainty, at least for a couple of decades, that you're going to get your returns, absolutely.
Finally, Scottish farmer Ian Wilson sums up what's in it for farmers.
We often get criticism, oh, you're taking land out of production for food, but, well, are we? I mean, before that, what were we growing here? We were growing feed, wheat that was just going to feed a cattle beast. We were rape that was probably going into oil. You know, how much food were we actually producing? I would question that. And I suppose my main counter-argument to that is, ultimately, we are a business. You know, it's easy in farming to get hung up on what our moral duties are, but first and foremost, we are a business. And any business will tell you, first and foremost, produce what your customer wants. And right now, I believe the public value energy more than they do food anyway. So I'm producing energy from land, not food.
So what do you think? It certainly seems to work well for Scottish farmers, but would it work in the Isle of Man? A lot hinges on decisions which government will have to make, and while this appears to make economic sense, its impact on zero carbon policies will need to be assessed before the green light is given. There's no doubt, though, that the farmers I spoke to are keen to see this progress. For now, though, I'm Phil Gorn. Goramayo, thanks for listening.